4. Denver, Colorado, 1988. Randy Armstrong was grateful for Frank. Ever since he'd gotten out of prison, it had been damn near impossible to find a job, even though obtaining gainful employment was one of the requirements of his parole. As Christian as everyone always claimed to be, none of them really believed in rehabilitation or giving a guy a second chance. The minute they found out he'd done time, he saw that familiar look pass over their faces, the one that said there was no way in hell they were going to hire him. And he knew that even though he'd paid his debt to society, they were going to lie and say the job was filled, or not pick anyone, rather than put him on the payroll. So thank God for Frank. An independent contractor, Frank didn't have to answer anyone but himself. He wasn't afraid to take a chance on someone who maybe didn't have the most upstanding background. He knew that Randy was good with his hands and familiar with construction. And that's all that mattered. Randy had come clean right away, had even ended up spilling details, but Frank hadn't cared. In fact, he'd understood. Smiling sympathetically, Frank said he knew how sometimes little girls would flirt with you. Didn't matter how old they were, sometimes they wanted it. And when they started screaming afterward, playing the victim once they got in their jollies, well, they might need to be beaten, shut up for their own good, so that other people wouldn't get the wrong impression. Frank knew the score, which was why it was such a pleasure to work for him. Although sometimes he did things that were a little bit strange. One time, for example, a neighborhood dog found its way onto the site where they were working. And grinning, Frank hit it with a hammer. The dog ran off, limping and bleeding, and Frank laughed. "Next time," he said, "that mutt's going into the cement." Another time, Frank showed up in the morning with a bag full of pelts. That's what he called them. Pelts. As though he was some sort of trapper back in the 1800s. Again, they were laying concrete, and Frank spread the pelts over the rebar lattice before pouring the cement. "What does that do?" Randy asked. Frank only smiled mysteriously and put a finger to the side of his nose, wiggling his eyebrows up and down like Groucho Marx. It was an odd and unnerving response, and Randy, feeling creeped out, had to look away. Frank also liked to tell stories. These were good stories, mostly, and he insisted they were true. But Randy had his doubts. One time, Frank said, he'd been working in California and been called in to oversee the construction of an addition to Johnny Carson's house. Johnny was pissed off one day, because the night before, he caught his wife blowing George Hamilton in the bathroom at a party. He'd gone in to take a leak and found the tan man sitting on the toilet, pants around his ankles, while his wife knelt on the floor before him, her head bobbing up and down. "I can't let that stand," Johnny said, and Frank was with him. So, under the talk show host's supervision, he put together a mousetrap-like device that appeared to be part of the construction. But when a smiling George Hamilton toured the site so Johnny could show him how things were coming along, he stepped on a spot that, through a series of what appeared to be coincidences, caused a board with a long nail poking out of it to slap him in the crotch. "You should have heard the bastard scream," Frank said, laughing. "Sounded like a woman getting her ass reamed." Randy said that he thought the wife should have been punished too, and Frank said that she had been. Johnny had divorced her and cut her off with no money. Another story involved a drunk Ronald Reagan, who had hired Frank to install an alarm system in his house. This was well before he was president, Frank said, but after he was governor of California. He was in kind of an in-between stage, and I don't think he knew what to do with himself. So he drank a lot. Anyway, he tells me that he wants to go joyriding in this crappy old pickup the gardener drove. It was parked in the driveway, and the gardener was in the back. The moron left his keys in the ignition, because he thought it would be safe there at Reagan's estate, and we just hopped in and took off. Reagan was driving, and he was drunk off his ass, almost hit the gate on the way out. We went careening down the road and ended up crashing into a fountain in front of Anthony Quinn's house. Luckily, Anthony Quinn wasn't home, because Reagan pulled his pants down and took a shit in the fountain. We left the truck there and walked back, where the gardener was panicking and running around, wondering where his pickup was. Frank laughed. Then Reagan told me to get back to work and wandered off. Said he needed to take a piss. These were all tall tales as far as Randy was concerned, but most were funny as hell, and he always enjoyed hearing Frank tell them. Overall, he thought, he had a good thing going here. Overall. He'd been working with Frank for a little over 3 months the first time it happened. It was late at night, and he was half asleep in his lounge chair when there was a loud knock on the door of his trailer. Randy jumped, startled. He wasn't expecting anyone. Who showed up at this hour anyway? He was more than a little drunk, but even through the fog of alcohol, he had enough wits about him to know that it was most likely his parole officer with a spot check. Use of alcohol was prohibited as part of his parole, and he quickly ran into the bathroom, poured some scope in his mouth, gargled, then swallowed, looking in the mirror to make sure his eyes weren't too red, although he could always claim to be tired. Randy hurried to answer the door. It was Frank. He let out a huge sigh of relief, a sigh that turned into a belch. Hey, he said. I need your help, Frank told him. Okay, Randy said warily. The fog was coming back in as adrenaline receded. He thought that it seemed awfully late to show up asking for a favor. Help with what? With a girl. A girl, Frank said. A little girl. Randy's brain was buzzing. Whatever this involved, it was definitely prohibited. He was not supposed to have any contact with minors. Any violation, and he would be sent back inside, no questions asked. But he was well-oiled, and right now, a little girl sounded really good. So he asked Frank exactly what he needed. Help, Frank repeated. Yeah, but, I mean, what do you want me to do? Help me. They were going around in circles, and Randy was starting to feel confused. The girl, she's in the back of the truck, under a tarp. The back of the truck? I accidentally killed her. That sobered him up. Randy started backing away, tried to close the door. Nah, dude. I can't what? Frank's eyes bored into his. I'll dump her out right here, call the cops, and tell them you fucked her before you killed her. Is that what you want? Randy shook his head, frightened. Good. Then help me. We need to take her to the site and put her in the cement where no one will find her. We'll pour a layer tonight, then add on tomorrow. And once the building's up, no one will ever be the wiser. He accompanied Frank out to the pickup, where he lifted a section of tarp to take a peek. Underneath, the girl's body was broken, as though it had been folded in on itself. He had never seen anything like it, and didn't even know how such a thing could have been done. What blood he saw was dried, although there seemed to be very little considering the damage. Cover that up, Frank said harshly. We have to get going. There's a lot to do before morning. They reached the site 10 minutes later, a half house they were building that would connect to an existing shotgun shack and hopefully make the place saleable. Randy hadn't realized it until now, but Frank had left a section of the cement foundation unpoured, and within the open square of dirt was a deeper hole lined with pelts. Pelts. He'd obviously planned this ahead of time. Working by moonlight, they carried the girl's twisted body from the truck to the hole. If Frank had gotten her into the truck by himself, Randy wondered, why was he needed to help get her out? The concrete was already mixed and ready. When had Frank done that? And they poured it over the girl, filling up the hole, then the entire frame, before smoothing it out. Randy was completely sober by this time, sober and scared. Despite what Frank had said, there was no way the concrete would be set by morning. It would be 2 days at the least before the cement would be dry enough to add another layer. What if some neighborhood kid came by in the meantime and poked a stick in there or something? What if the body was discovered? Frank seemed to know what he was thinking.
It'll be fine, he said. Let's go. It'll be fine.
And it was fine. The cement dried. They put in posts and added another layer. They started on the walls and the wiring, and as Frank had promised, no one was the wiser. It happened again about a month later. Another late-night knock. Another child in the back of the truck. This one, a boy. They were drywalling the half house by this time, so the boy's body could not be buried in the floor. Frank had plans, though. He'd already rented a tar kettle, though they wouldn't be roofing for at least another week, and he'd heated up the tar.
We just throw him in, Frank said. Let him simmer for a week or two. There'll be nothing left of him by then, and anything that is left will be gluing down shingles.
Randy had not asked any questions the first time, and he didn't this time either. They carried the kid, about 4 or 5, staring blankly at nothing, dried rivulets of blood descending from both ears, out of the truck, tucked him into the tar kettle, closed the lid, and let the body burn. Who were these kids, Randy wondered. Why had Frank killed them? Randy didn't know, and he didn't want to know. But working for Frank was getting to be too heavy, and he needed to find a way out. If it were up to him, he'd just leave and relocate, go to another part of the state, or another part of the country even. But the terms of his parole decreed that he could not leave the area, and he doubted that his truck could get him more than 60 miles away without breaking down. And he was afraid of Frank. That was the main reason. It wasn't logical. Would Frank really skip out on a paying job to hunt down an easily replaceable day laborer? But it was how he felt. The man was wrong. Sure, Randy liked little girls. He even liked to be rough with little girls. But Frank was on a whole other level. Frank was scary. The third time Frank showed up at his trailer at night, the child with him was still alive. It was a girl, and she was naked, and Randy liked that. But he knew what Frank was going to do to her, and the thought made him feel sick inside. He was in way over his head, and for the first time, he considered trying to kill Frank. He could save the girl, be a big hero, tell the cops about the other two kids, and...
What are you thinking? Frank said softly.
He looked as though he knew exactly what Randy was thinking. Taking a deep breath, Randy tried to smile.
Thinking about how cute she is.
Was, Frank said, and twisted her neck. There was an audible crack, and then the gagged child in his hands went limp.
You can do what you want with her, then we'll plaster her up in my basement.
I can't do anything with her, Randy responded. She's dead, Frank shrugged.
We'll put her away then.
He didn't want to. He didn't want to have anything to do with this, but he had no choice. They were partners. Frank had made sure of that. Over the next several months, they put away 3 more little kids, incorporating one into the wall of a house they were remodeling, coating the other 2 with plaster, and putting them in Frank's basement, where they stood with 2 others like statues against the wall. Part of him wanted to get caught and put an end to it all. But another scarier part was actually beginning to enjoy the process. The missing children were all over the newspapers and the television. The last one had even made the national news, an example of a large and frightening pattern in contemporary America. He was astonished that it seemed so easy to get away with such heinous acts when he had been caught so quickly for his own earlier transgressions. But obviously Frank knew something he didn't. Maybe it was the relatively straightforward simplicity of it all, the hide-in-plain-sight aspect of Frank's deeds that kept them from being caught. Did he still want to be caught? Randy wasn't sure. But he continued to feel uneasy around Frank, and if the contractor happened to die in a construction accident or a car crash, Randy certainly wouldn't shed any tears. He was deep asleep, dreaming his usual dream
a nightmare of his mother beating him with his own baseball bat, when he was awakened by a crazed pounding on the outer wall of his trailer. The noise traveled, as though someone was running around the trailer and pounding on it as he did so.
"Asshole," Randy muttered.
He got out of bed and, still in his underwear, hurried out to the living room, grabbing the axe he kept for just such occasions. He swung open the door, ready to run off whoever was out there. A sharp and terrible pain hit his stomach at the same time he heard the familiar piston-like click of a nail gun. He looked down to see a long framing nail protruding from his midsection, blood welling around it, soaking his t-shirt and dripping over his boxers. Another click, another horrible stab of pain, and a nail was sticking out of his right thigh. Those first two had been intentionally staggered, their shooting deliberately paced, but the nails came at him fast and furiously now, hitting his legs, his arms, his chest. Click, 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 click. He screamed in agony, dropped the axe, tried to go back inside, but as he turned, nails embedded themselves in his side, in his back, in his buttocks. Click, 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 click. He stumbled, falling forward, against the wall next to the door.
"Sorry," he heard a man say beneath his screams, and the man's voice was Frank's.
Then Frank was in front of him, holding the nail gun.
"I'm almost done here in Denver, and I'm afraid I can't trust you to—"
"You can trust me," Randy yelled through the pain. "You can trust me."
Frank leaned forward, smiling. "But I need you for attic insulation." And he pressed the flat metal of the gun against Randy's forehead and shot a nail into his brain.